I just wanted to introduce you in a way to art and the spiritual, because we're putting form and volume and density onto things which in fact are rather transparent, floaty. And how do you get all that onto a piece of paper? Well, I'm the beginning of each of our the beginning of each of our sessions started out with trying to even illustrate how Michelangelo came to illustrate the spiritual. And you know where this is now, in the Sistine ceiling, the creation of Adam. Here is God, according to Michelangelo, and here is Adam. And God is in the process of creating. Now, what you have here is a space, okay, a kind of sacred emptiness, but it wasn't always there. If you look hard, you can find that the original finger of Adam came this way, and just kissed the finger of God and turned around out here. I don't know if you can make that out from where you're sitting, but it's very obvious, and Michelangelo wrote about it. He wrote as much as he painted, by the way, sonnets and all that kind of good thing. Well, what made him change his mind was listening to a hymn in the chapel down below. And one of the verses said this: "The sevenfold gifts of grace are thine, O finger of the hand divine." Okay? Sevenfold graces is the way we talk about the Holy Spirit. So, the finger of the hand divine now has a Holy Spirit attachment, namely the space, that empty space is the Holy Spirit. So when you're doing imaging of all of these things, this is not necessarily a depiction of what actually was or is. This is more a depiction of where that meets us. And vicarious, where what meets us meets you. In imaging, okay, so there's a lot to go on. The reason I didn't do any more of those things was the fact that I met Matt. Matt came up with a whole different idea about having bulletins that converse between themselves. So that's where we are today. Oh yeah, this thing. Okay. We have been going through the life of Christ, starting at the manger, wise men, the whole scenario, Mary and Joseph, the flight into Egypt on a buggy in Canada, driven through the snow. This Curlex flight into Egypt, and it has become... I sat down for a cup of coffee this morning at breakfast time. Six people immediately came up to me and said, "How do you spell curl?" Great. Get acquainted with him. He's a marvel. Absolute marvel. Okay. Jesus is a growing boy, and he has gone to the temple to teach the elders, which is chutzpah. And nobody had more chutzpah than Jesus. We don't take that aspect of his life unto ourselves. We try and be gentle and calm and loving, but every now and then a little chutzpah helps. This is Rembrandt, and Rembrandt is a drawing machine. Rembrandt knows more about how to get everything you can out of a single line, and he puts these together. I mean, if this whole thing, it's a smaller thing, but if it took him more than 20 minutes, he probably felt he was wasting his time. He just rips through, and it's all because of what he sees, how he looks at things, and it's constantly the light and the dark. I show you this so that you become aware, if not even proud, of the fact that Jesus and at his baptism, was surrounded by Lutherans. I think upon my conversion of a number of years back, that Martin Luther was ELCA. He sure wasn't Missouri Synod. So at any rate, here you got the guys present. This was done by Cranach, who was almost like the court painter for the Lutheran Church at this time. And there's Luther. There's Buchenhagen.
Yeah.
Yeah. This Melanchthon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Melanchthon. They're all in there somewhere. And if Luther or if Cranach didn't quite understand some of them, he kind of covered them over. Overlapped. He's just got the main guys up front, which is very Lutheran. Okay. We're talking about Jesus' ministry. Now, here's another fellow that I bet you haven't heard of. This is an artist from England who worked from the late 1800s, 1890, and so forth, into the first half of the 20th century, of the first year of the 20th century. He does the most outrageous portraits of Jesus. Anybody knows that's not what Jesus looked like. Well, some people know. But he made him a kind of Middle Eastern guy. That this is not a German Jesus. And it's too late to straighten the man out. But here is Jesus in the desert, contemplating one of his scripture passages, which says, "Behold, how the mother hen gathers her chicks." Okay, it's a lesson from nature that is applicable to how we should live our lives, and he takes this literally and wraps this Jesus as a kind, almost, he makes almost a nest out of himself. If you can vision it that way, he is supporting the whole little family down there on the ground. Okay? He went out into the wilderness, and there he was also tempted of the devil. This is about the nastiest temptation picture I could find, and I found it in Uganda. And they know the devil in Uganda. His name is Amin. And we were there when all of that came down, and this was one of the results of that episode. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the artist. It's around somewhere, but it is a very hastily painted, and it is black and white. And white is good, and black is not. He is actually talking about his own people for a while here. That's tricky. That's really tricky. So you can imagine this might be more acceptable over here than it is in Africa. Okay.
Well, I was just going to point out also that one of the things that you'll see in the cultures that are newer to Christianity, it's not an absolute, but you'll see it, is that the good is white or bright, and the bad is much darker, and the artists that have been in the Christian cultures longer operate more in the middle tones, in the gray area.
Yeah, it's almost a convert approach if you're tackling Christianity for the first time. You've got the good and the bad, and you just don't mix them. Eventually, you see that they can overlap from time to time.
Where did you find these? In museums?
I found this in Uganda.
In Uganda, in a museum or where?
No, in the artist's house. Yeah, but some of these have been published in books. There are wonderful books on the history of the relationship between the Gospels and art. A lot of books. We tend not to go in that direction. I couldn't find any in the library here. I've got to speak to a couple of people. If you want me back. Okay. So the early life, he's gathering his disciples, and he is now calling Matthew's namesake. And Matthew was a tax collector, so that when Jesus pointed directly at him, Matthew is over there saying, "You gotta be kidding. Me? I'm a tax collector. How am I supposed to follow you? You got really very strong feelings about money, like render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and stuff like that. You got to be careful. I need a bigger tax base than that." So he places this thing into an everyday atmosphere. There are the local boys, the local rowdy boys that are gathered around the table, and you can tell they have, this is high Renaissance, people. You can tell these rowdy boys because they are carrying their swords with them. At any moment, you could walk down in the high Renaissance and there would be a skirmish going on, and it was gangbanging, okay, if that expression is not new to you. Gang warfare. It was dangerous living in Florence at the time of the High Renaissance. Don't you love that? This is a collage. You cannot look at this and be dour or be even serious. This is Jesus taking a break and playing with the kids and just having a riotous good time, laughing. Look at these kids. They're probably singing. It looks like they're singing. And Jesus is just laughing. And look, this is Korean, is it not?
I'm not sure.
Okay. But at any rate, he's dressed as a worker. He hadn't got his robe on or anything like that. He's just off the street playing with the kids. Okay? Anybody recognize the style?
Monet.
You're in the same group, but it's Van Gogh. Yeah, I heard some Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He paints light. Van Gogh was a minister for a short portion of his life. He was Dutch Reformed, which is serious ministry, And in fact, he took it too seriously and had to go to England in order to spread the good word and also take up more lessons and practice his craft and skill. Wonderful. The Bible was very important to him. The sword. Good Samaritan. He surprises you every now and then with how literal this can be, how he pushes that guy up onto his donkey and gets him ready. That's a horse. Yeah. Gets him ready to take him to the nearest Holiday Inn. Yeah. It's strong. It's bright. You have to understand when you read about people like Van Gogh, you tend to think that in order to be an artist, you have to be slightly off kilter, be a bit strange, be weird, and it's true. I'm making artistic license for how we behave, and so I warned you, and just be ready for it. No, the process of being an artist is constantly making decisions about what is the right thing to do when nobody before you has told you that this is the right way to do it. Because you're starting a new thing, and it's your thing, and you can't read a book about how your thing should be. So what you have is a slew of choices you have to make. I would venture to say that the number of really, really great artists whose history we know about, that about 90% of them are ADHD. Yep. It helps, believe you me, it really helps. I don't know what I am, and I like it that way. But from time to time, I think the older I get, the more ADHD I get. But it is such a constant struggle to ask yourself, is this gesture right? Is this color right? Is this expression on the face of Jesus right? Are you sure you want to do this? And after you're doing it, what are you going to do with what you just did? Are you going to let people see that and make judgments about you and all of that kind of stuff? It's constant. It's constant in your head. Are you building a new reality or are you copying an old one?
It's actually a good segue. Because the next one,
oh, there you go.
Yeah, is one of ours. And when you look at the Good Samaritan, you start with the choice. In our process, we start with the choice. What's the subject? Could be the Samaritan. Could be the guy getting help. We didn't choose either. We chose the parable itself. Because the parable gives the opportunity to see things in the current context.
Here's a good Samaritan. People are coming out of church, and there's the guy lying down on the, what did we learn in church today?
It wasn't that, thank not goodness.
That. Yeah, not that. It was another gospel lesson. So we'll just let him lie there. And who comes to help? We have fun making decisions like this because our guess is as good as anybody's. Who comes to help? A guy you would least expect, which is in the parable. Least expecting, we got a really wealthy guy who has stopped his limo and his driver is waiting, and he is helping this guy almost in spite of himself. It's a totally different angle. Mm-hmm. Central America, does the exact same thing. There's a guy all dressed in black who has walked past the whole scenario on the other side. Okay, so
which reflects that bright and black again.
It's a heavy story in a really beautiful design. I mean, the colors, it is so central in the earth colors, the growing things. It's just beautiful.
What artist was that?
I never knew. I never knew. Rembrandt, the last painting he ever did, was of the prodigal son. A lot has been written about this, including some favorite theologians of mine that described the whole narrative here. But the boy has come, the brother is not altogether happy, the father is delirious. Rembrandt considered this the story of him. This is like Rembrandt is the prodigal son. Rembrandt was totally ADHD. He was off the charts. And he would have people come over and pose. He would have his poor father come over to his studio and pose for him, not as his poor father, but as, like, if you may have recalled, the man in the golden helmet. Have you ever, does that ring a bell maybe? No, it's okay. It's just a guy, an older guy, who is wearing a big, heavy pot on his head. It's a helmet, a war battle helmet. And this guy, my gosh, his neck is corrugated from holding this thing up. And I don't know who he thought he was supposed to be portraying. This guy has no business wearing this helmet. But it's one of the great classic paintings in all of our history. So Rembrandt did what he needed to do, even bug his parents, and spend everything and mess up his marriage and do all of that thing. Just not looking toward the end, not doing a good budget. Oh, let's go. I'm on bad soil. Yeah. This is my good shepherd, and this is I just got tired of wussy shepherds. Those shepherds that you see that we give to our Sunday school kids, they would be the very first guys to throw down the stick and head for home. You know, I mean, these are wussy. I don't know. Every now and then, because of that, I am tempted to do a couple things. I didn't bring my other version of this. This was the man version. I did a woman as a good shepherd, a shepherdess. And that was, I mean, she was really getting it on with the lamb. They were schmoozing all over the place. And this is not a schmoozer. Okay, this is a guardian. Okay. The stilling of the tempest. I had to do a hospital thing in Chicago, and they wanted me, one of the windows I was to do. It's 8-story tall windows that we did in stained glass for this hospital. And they were in different units. One of them, he wanted Christ stilling the tempest. So I did a study of Christ asleep in the back of the boat. You know, so much for stilling the tempest. As far as the guy who wanted the picture, he said, I want Christ standing up with his arms raised. I said, he's in a tempest. I know that. Well, I said, he's God. So he's not stupid. So we compromised, and I had him sitting in the back. Okay. If you you really want to know how it happens, you get the children to draw for you, and they will tell you precisely how it was. If we're going to have Jesus standing, we're going to have everybody standing. And that's right. It's kind of like what happens in church, you know? Let us pray. This is done in the monastery of St. Catherine at Sinai. Some of you been to Sinai? A couple of you? Yeah. Great. This was one of the very first depictions of Christ and his transfiguration, because there was a mountain outside where people thought that was the trend. There are actually two transfiguration mountains, one in Israel and one in Egypt. Oh, come on, guys, get it together. At any rate, this became so formative that all future transfigurations have almost the same scenario. Peter, James, and John, and then Moses and Elias. But sometimes you will also have Jesus going up on the left-hand side and coming down on the right-hand side, bringing his disciples with him as they climb and descend the mountain. Okay? There they are. Same three guys down there. Okay? It's all passed on narrative. This is from Chartres Cathedral in France.
Could you back up for another slide for a minute? Is that Jesus in the middle right there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the intersection.
Is his face blank? Or am I just at an odd angle?
The face could sure be blank. But glass is very fragile. And if it's in the light over a long time, everything begins to fade. And in fact, they just began taking all the windows out of Chartres Cathedral and restoring them. Incredible job. These windows were actually designed so that you could just lift them out. That was because every now and then the Germans took aim at them. You know, all us Germans. You know, that was so they could. And in fact, when the Germans got to Chartres, there were no windows in the cathedral. They were bummed. Where are the windows? And nobody coughed up the information. They were actually under hay and straw in people's backyards at Chartres. And they brought them all out after the peace and put them up. So they've had an interesting life, which included resurrection. The resurrecting of the windows. That's wonderful. That's mine. And sometimes, you know, you're carving a big block of wood in order to do this. What you carve down doesn't show. What is left up is covered with ink and pressed down. Okay? So you're carving wood and you're trying to create light. That you got to be a little silly, people. You really, if you were to think that through, instead of being kind of wonky in the head, if you were to think that through, you would try some other way. But artists need to think it through. To see how can I make more than one impression of this while I'm trying to create this image. And so there's a limited edition of these things. They're all gone and scattered, but yeah.
I'd be interested in you maybe talking a little bit about your decisions when you decide you're done with a piece. How do you reach that point?
I reach that point a lot. No, seriously, I reach it a lot, and then I leave it, and then I come back and try and reach it again. Because sometimes in the process of, you know, you're running your hand over everything, or you're chopping away at 1 foot away from your image, and things generally, for me, are a little out of focus. You know, so I got to take that thing and put it on the other side of the room so I can get a good feel for it. But no, you finish a thing over and over and over again. And sometimes you wish you had finished sooner. You skip a really good thing and you screwed it up. That happens a lot. But the mentality of the artist in general doesn't allow for that kind of thinking. Destroying, in fact, is the major process of art. Destroy a big hunk of marble, I'm going to destroy a big sheet of canvas. You know, the whole thing is to get rid of the neat and the tidy and start messing around. And out of that comes something hopefully that's complete, that's understandable, that's useful for other people, that is maybe entertaining, funny, whatever, but done. I think most artists simply say, I just can't. I can't do anymore without making it less.
It also depends on the medium.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because sculpturally, some sculpture mediums are additive, others are subtractive. This is a subtractive one. You got to keep digging out in order to make what you want. And so it's actually easier to stop when you have to subtract, because the opposite is that if you can add, it's easier to just keep adding.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah, it's, I would never ask anybody to be an artist. If you are to be an artist, you will be one, you are one. But there are people in our midst who are artists and they don't know it, like children. If I catch anybody mocking at a child's work, or trying to correct it, hold me back. Hold me back because I would be an interfering person. But children know more about how to express themselves than any of us. And they know when to quit. And you look at it and it is funny. By your own heart, it is funny. By a child's art, it is serious business. You ever watched a child doing art? It is like, and the tongue with the tongue out? Oh, man, they are so into it. And you don't want to mess that up. You want to encourage that. Okay. Here is a slightly different version, all right, of the Transfiguration. It's an icon. And Moses, and this interpretation of the Transfiguration is repeated over and over in a variety of different styles, depending on where it was done, if it was in Russia or in Europe. But you've got Moses and Elias at the top. Peter, James, and John are down here. And in a little, kind of looks like a cave, this is Christ and his disciples walking up the hill. This is Christ and his disciples coming down there. Okay? It's not perfect perspective, all right? Cut him some slack here. This whole thing is about that. Yeah.
This next series, by the way, is from an artist who I don't think was ever able to let his inner child go.
Oh, no. Alan Blackman is a calligrapher, a master calligrapher. His medium is the brush. Everything he does is a brush, not with the little calligraphic pens and things like that, but with brushes. He just sits down and starts writing. He doesn't lay anything out in advance. The guy makes a living by painting sale signs on grocery store windows in San Francisco. He's a sign painter. He is really one of the true geniuses in the area of Christian art. His favorite theme is Our Father. It's the Lord's Prayer. Okay? I mean, he's a painter. And he is painting with letters. That is really giving a typical writer a whole other arena in which to incorporate your message.
He's a painter, but he's also a sign painter, and he has fun with that.
He does. Do you love this? We're not done. But it's either a sign painter or some seminary professor who's hung this over the blackboard and is now on the stick. He's pointing to this. Okay? In case you missed what I said before, I will make this perfectly clear to you. And if you come from a tradition that is holier than mine, I will back up a little and help you make it through. Okay? So we'll do one in Latin. This is interpretive theology of the Lord's Prayer. In fact, he's got our daily bread. Our daily bread. I expect to see that on the grocery store. Come and get our daily bread. Oh, and that. Wow. The guy was a little scary. No, he wouldn't be. He was. He is kind of impish, little short. Kind of Charlie Chaplin-ish.
His talent is scary.
When we had a wedding at our house, we had a wedding procession in plain, and he came for the wedding, and he processed with an enormous sunflower. That was his banner. It's that kind of thinking. ADHD, but boy, did he handle it good. I mean, he really handled it. Okay, another element seen from Christ's life, the last we've been looking at, are Lord, teach us to pray. Okay, and the results of that. When you pray, say. Right. Now, we are going to Peter, who has found a coin in a fish's mouth. This is scary to me. There is Peter, who decided to gut the fish right on the spot and get a coin out of it, and he says, now what do I do with it? So he shows it to Jesus. Here is Jesus, and this right here is Peter.
So this is polyscenic, like we talked about yesterday.
That's right. We've already got two times areas. That one, and then this one. And Jesus says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. So he is giving the coin to the tax collector. So, even though this is on the verge of high Renaissance, what the people are looking at here is a struggle to figure out how to do all of this simultaneously. And they did it by doing things like polyscenic, polyhistoric, things all kind of happening as though it were simultaneous. They are also trying to figure out now how to do perspective. Do you know what I mean when I say perspective? We've got things that gradually disappear as they go back into space, and if you're taking an art class in grade school, you've got to learn how to make a cube and that goes into space, all of that kind of stuff. This was just beginning in art, how to create space on a flat surface, and Masaccio was one of the first. And in order to demonstrate, what he did was put some trees up and then cut all the foliage off, because really all he wanted was the vertical core of the tree, and the core of that tree, as it goes away, is getting shorter and shorter, which means we are now going into space. The early expressions of how artists from the Renaissance approach their stuff is fascinating and rather short. Healing, Rembrandt, quickly. Healing. This is more German. This is very German, in fact. I think the artist's name is Dietrich or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, the artist's name is Dietrich. And at any rate, they are lowering the guy through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, remember that little story? We have a dear friend in England as an artist. He had showed the picture of them hauling this guy, but it was a home in England, and it was an old home in England, and they had thatched roofs, and this guy is they're hauling up their friend up the side of the house, and he is slightly going through the roof before he gets over to Jesus' side, you know. And it is so humorous, it is so funny. These guys trying their best and they're not really doing a good job.
Shifting gears.
Yeah. Now the Passion of Christ. Entry into Jerusalem. Sabaoth-san. Do you know the process? And we explained that process a bit. It's stencils. Watanabe was cutting stencils for each color. It was a different stencil. And he would make, so he would have a collection at the end of printing that. He'd have a collection of maybe 20 different stencils, all numbered, so that the next time he wanted to do this and make a limited edition of these, he could do the exact. He made his own paper. He created a lot of his own pigments. So he knew how to do that, and you just call out the stencil form, and you pounce. Is that familiar? You pounce. Mm-hmm. You got a stencil brush that is stiff on the bottom, and you do the paint like that. You don't do it like that. It's very physical and noisy.
And the colors were based on what he had.
Yeah. Yep.
How big is that painting?
This is. What? This?
Yeah.
No, this is a piece of sculpture with wheels. This is a mobile. This thing is movable, and this thing is marched in procession. So when the congregation celebrates the beginning of the whole Passion narrative, you start with the entry into Jerusalem. But the interesting thing that is that this is also on the way to Santiago de Compostela. Mm-hmm. This is one of the major churches on that route, and so the idea of pilgrimage is noted to all of these people on this route, and is one of the great pilgrimage and walkways. You guys love to walk. You should try walking the pilgrimage of Santiago de Compostela. It's a wonderful thing.
The next one questions whether the entry is the important part or Jerusalem.
This is Christ's entry into Chicago. No, it is. We can name the buildings. You know the buildings. Here he is on a flatbed truck, waving to everybody, and he is now down the way getting ready to pass the stand where all, I don't know whether his float is going to get judged.
Yeah.
There's not much to it, but just him. But this is childlike. If God were coming back, if Jesus were coming back, how would we meet him in Chicago? We'd put him on the back of a truck. That's what we do with all of our major people. They come in. We haven't got a good, didn't do a very good job of decorating the truck, but he snuck up on us. We were not expecting him. And so we'll just take the raw flatbed and run him through town. That is so funny. That is funny because it is at one at the same time very contemporary and very naive. I mean, in a nice way. Simple, basic.
Uh-huh. The figure in front of the truck is lying, putting something on the pavement.
Well, there you go. I don't know. Somebody said palm branches.
I don't know.
I thought he was a rowdy. You know, we have those in Chicago. But no. No, I hadn't even thought of that, but I think I like that idea. Yeah, it looks almost like a little tree hanging on the top. So it could be a stack of palms.
What's that ramp like thing going up to that?
Ridge.
We're just up.
Yeah, that's the drawbridge. It's right there. Those of you that know Chicago can pretty well name these things.
Chicago River.
Yeah, which turns green on my birthday.
Where's the ELC?
Where ELC is
at the airport. It's near the airport.
I think this was before they had a ELC.
But it's out by the airport.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. This isn't anywhere near the
airport. No.
And this is Jesus going to the temple and cleaning it up. This is by an artist whose name is El Greco, whose real name is Domenico Fiatacopoli, so we call him El Greco, and the Greek. He was born in Greece, and this is Christ cleansing the temple. But when he got the call from Spain to work in Toledo in Spain, he went in a rush, and the end result was this next picture. Mm-hmm. The same exact theme, but look what Spain did to his color. Mm-hmm. Spain is dark colors. The dark red, the black and red together, that's very Spanish. And here he's going through the exact same action as in the Italian version, but this is really, El Greco is, he shouldn't be called El Greco, he should be called El Spaniard. Amazing.
And this was part of the lectionary, so we were tasked with.
There's Jesus kicking the money changers out of the temple.
Yeah, and what does he see? It's destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. That was the text. So.
He was speaking of himself, of course. And so here he is in advance. Pondering, he has laid it out. 3 days, I am about ready to die here, and he is looking at the instruments of his death and pondering his resurrection at the same time. He knows. So we are going into Jerusalem. We have the washing of the disciples' feet. And the one main character in the story of the washing of the disciples' feet is Peter. Peter comes off like, hey, no, I am so unworthy, Lord. Just don't, I would rather you not be a servant to me. And he got a good balling out. from Jesus, really bawling out. And so Peter said, okay, my hands and my feet, give me a bath, okay? Another version of exactly the same story. Peter, I'm telling you here, just shut up and listen. You can tell who Peter is because he's always got his hand on his head trying to figure out what all is going on. This is over the entrance of the Romanesque cathedral at Nîmes in southern France. The Last Supper as a kind of round table. We don't think of it like that. But remember when I said one of the first things of early Renaissance is this depiction of space. They would do anything they could to design a believable space on a flat surface. And Giotto began it and carried it off pretty good, although there are some mistakes, like the bench is not parallel to the building. Normally it would be in a good perspective. But it's a good shot. It's a believable cube that they're all sitting in. Where's this from?
Oh, this is Congo.
The Congo?
Yeah.
Even in the Congo, we got a wussy black John leaning on Jesus. You cannot have a Last Supper without this guy schmoozing all over Jesus. If I were Peter, I would have given him a rap over the head. You know, come on, be a man. That kind of thing, but no. He is the disciple that Jesus loved. I don't know how he felt about the others, but John was always referred to as the one who Jesus loved. Oh, isn't this wonderful, you Lutherans? It's good to know, isn't it? I mean, if anybody doubts your origin, lay this on them. We also have Judas sitting at the same temple, at the same table as, you know, the Lutherans. Here's Luther, Bugenhagen, Junker Georg is down here. Yeah.
Melanchthon.
Yep.
Who's Santa Claus?
Yeah.
They're having a better supper than we have at our communion. They've got a Mexican table for us.
Who's Santa Claus?
The guy here?
Yeah.
Cranach, the guy who painted the whole thing.
Oh.
If you can do this, you know, you don't want to really be shy. You know, I'm one of the boys. Okay. Watanabe again, Last Supper for Jesus is going to be primarily sushi. Last Supper, going around the column. Okay? Tintoretto, a Last Supper that is as tall as going up to the top rail of the balcony, all the way down to the floor, and as long as this room.
Those people are life size.
Huge. Bird's eye view of the whole thing. It turns out to be a round table.
That's Syria.
Some guys are reaching out for the plates.
Hard to eat them.
I like knees and elbows. If you look hard at knees and elbows, you get a spiral. See that one? That's a knee spiral. Is that interesting? China? Doing supper after most of the guys had left, and who you got left over? Well, you got the wuss, you got John. Jesus can't move, John is all over there. Come on, John, give me a break here. And I don't know for sure, but that's probably Judas. And I don't, this guy looks like a guy from another religion. It looks like a Catholic priest, like a missionary or something.
And the Last Supper with chopsticks, huh?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. This is mine. I did this. I got in trouble while I was doing my master's and master in fine arts at Indiana University, and a guy really resented all the Jesus paintings I was doing. And he came into my studio and said, "Jesus Christ, not another Jesus Christ." And said, if you got to do a master painting as your primary final thing, along with a room full of all of your other stuff, and that master painting, if Jesus is in there, I'm not going to approve of your degree. And so this is my thesis painting. if he doesn't want Jesus, he's going to have to take him out personally. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean, Jesus? I had my friends all line up at the drugstore counter, and I took their picture through the front window, and from that picture I did this painting. I can't help it if they had on the signs like save 12. We'll just keep that in there. The guy, he said, "You can't tell me that that's not Jesus." I said, "That's not Jesus. That's a friend of mine. Should I bring him in? You want to see? That's how he looks. This is me, right here, on the very end. And we're waiting for some service here." So, the guy was really bummed. He was really totally bummed because he thought this was Christ-centered because of what he expected from me, not really because of what he saw. Under any other circumstances, you could take this as an ordinary scene. But he expected me to do Jesus paintings, and so he turned this one into a Jesus painting. Not me, he did. I kind of helped. We've been seeing a lot of this guy from Canada. He had them all lying on, this is probably quite accurate. That's probably the way it was. This long table and all that, I don't think so. This is the way you had banquets. His depictions of the suffering and death of Jesus, which we'll see tomorrow, are the most egregious depictions of torture that you can possibly imagine. And they were, yeah? I mean, crucifixion, that's you can't tidy that up. We tend to, but it doesn't work, okay? Isn't that an interesting thing? What I like about it is that it is very accurate, but at the same time, Jesus is looking very much like a priest. Mm-hmm. I like that. I really like that. Prophet, priest, king.
Right.
Okay. Last Supper is this one. That's a kid. They're all out there. It looks like they spilled a lot of wine. Jesus at the Last Supper. We had to be told because it looks kind of like Jesus on the end of a mesa. You know? Yeah. And Jesus, as my grandbaby would say, is loopy. He doesn't have any clothes on. He's getting ready to be crucified. Oh gosh. Children, leave them alone and let them do the natural thing, and they'll delight you every time. I think that's it.
Okay.